Welcome to this workshop on reading. My name is Laurel Weaver and I've taught for 4 years. My first year was in Seymour, Missouri from 2018 to 2019. It was an incredibly difficult year. I was away from home, and after that year I said I would never teach again. Well, God has other plans for me, and since I have learned to never say never. And in 2021 I began teaching at Pioneer Christian Academy. It's about 10 miles east of here. And I've been there ever since, and I love being a teacher in my work there. I love reading, I love poetry, but sometimes I struggle to teach it. And I was excited to study it more and learn strategies for an engaging reading class. So why is reading important? Till I come, give attention to
reading.
That's from 1 Timothy 4. In this scripture, Paul is telling Timothy to read the scriptures to the church. One of the best reasons to read is so we can learn from God and read the Bible. I was talking to a teacher friend while studying for this, and I asked her why we should read. Her answer, to the best of my recollection, is reading is important because it is how we keep on learning. If you can read, you can learn anything. So my second point on the handout is to learn in the future, and also reading helps us learn from the past. So now I'm going to talk about reading class for a little bit. So structure your reading class so that every child is learning. This summer I am taking a classroom management course. And while we aren't here to talk about classroom management, there was something I wanted to share with you all that really helped me think about my reading class. So the first thing you want to do is set expectations. Setting expectations for our students is important for helping every student learn. And then I had to think, do my students actually know what I expect from them? Since this is a reading class, the statement could be reworded as, do my students know what I expect from them for reading class? If yes, I was trying to think of something funny to say here, but missed, so. But if no, like me, here are some steps you can take to get back on track. Do a walkthrough of your reading class. Think about each thing that happens during your reading class. Here are some questions I came up with that went through my mind. Do they rush to the reading circle or the class table? Or maybe you do reading class at your desk, so that's not an issue. Do they have assigned seats? What about their assignments? Is there a section they can do before class? Or if teaching a multi-grade classroom, what will your other class be doing while you are teaching? Will your students read in a predetermined order, or will you randomly pick them? Think about these four questions. How do you want your lesson to feel? How do you want your lessons to flow so that students fully understand what you are teaching? How do you want your students to treat and use materials? And how do you want your students to talk and interact with each other? If we're teaching class, we probably don't want them to talk and interact with each other at all. But it was still something to think about. This is how I planned out my expectations. Visualize how you want your reading class to flow each day. Write a list of all the things your students will have to know to make reading class flow the way for you and to intend it to flow. And anticipate any questions you think they will have. Answer these questions when creating your expectations. This year, I'm incredibly blessed to have an aide, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be taking one reading class while she is taking the other. So I wrote out some expectations for a single grade classroom, and then I included them on your handout so you don't have to try to write them down. So for a single grade classroom, this is what I wrote out for my expectations. Send third grade with Miss Amber. Make sure they have their readers. When I dismiss them, fourth grade may come back to their assigned spot in my reading circle with their reader. And I'm gonna really emphasize that this year, that they need to come back with their reader rather than running back for it and wasting all of our time. I will introduce any new material and introduce the day's story. After those introductions, we will read the story. I personally choose to pull sticks for whose turn it is to read. Equity sticks are an awesome thing to have in your classroom. And if you don't know what they are, they're just popsicle sticks you have in your student's name. Each popsicle stick has a student's name on it. You pull them out of a cup, Whoever stick you pull, it's their turn to read. But then you come right into this problem. How do you keep your students whose stick has already been pulled from zoning out? Our school went to a training, and this was their idea, that you just randomly pull a stick from the ones that have already been pulled. And then on Tuesdays, we will read around the circle so I can take oral reading grades, and I will talk about oral reading grades later. When we are finished, I will ask questions from the story, and to answer those questions, I will be pulling sticks again. I will also put a plug in here for having your students answer in complete sentences. After the questions are answered, they may return to their desks and answer the questions in their workbook while I walk around and help those who need help. For a multi-grade classroom, we'll come in from recess, and fourth grade may work on finishing their language lessons, corrections, or seat work. I will call third grade to the reading circle, and they will sit in their assigned spots. We'll repeat the process I outlined in the earlier. And then when third grade is finished, I'll dismiss them back and repeat the process for fourth grade. So how do we make our reading classes engaging and get our students excited about it? You can do that process I just explained, every day, and they're gonna get bored. So the beginning of the year, I always start by reading a story. This one is my favorite. The True Story of the Three Little Pigs by A. Wolf, as told to John, and I do not know how to say his last name. I should have practiced that. If you are reading a chapter book, we have a couple chapter books that we do. We do A Secret in the Maple Tree, we use Abeka in our school, and then Pilgrim's Progress, Christiana's Journey. Have them do a project about it. For Pilgrim's Progress, Christiana's Journey, we did dioramas. My diorama is not of Pilgrim's Progress because I did not want them to copy mine. Mine is of the book Snow Treasure. I'll turn him around so you all can see him. Also, I know projects are a lot of work and they take weeks, but in the end, I had to admit it was worth it. Have them do an interactive book report using a cereal box. This one is on the book, The Vanderbeekers of 141st Street. The title and author and number of pages rating is all on the top. Setting, main characters, summary. And then you get to create a game for the back. And I'm not sure this maze is solvable, but you can try afterwards if you'd like. And then another idea I had was to use a file holder. This is called the Flip Flap Book Report, and it's got a lot of flip flops. And there's just different things under each one about the different elements of a book. And then I had this brilliant idea this morning as I was looking at one of my art projects. Use Model Magic to do a book report. I thought that could be fun. I don't have an example since that was a brainy idea I had this morning, but it was an idea. So here's a scenario for you. It's the middle of February and nobody, including you, no matter how much you want to admit it, wants to do reading that day. So what can I do as a teacher to get us all excited about reading? Some of my ideas are simple and some will take a bit more work, but I urge you to do not to do more than you can handle. So the first one is incredibly easy. Read in a different spot. Read on the floor, or if you have a special place in your classroom, read there. My special place in my classroom is my couch. Do reading class with your shoes off. Answer all the questions, not just the ones in your teacher book, orally. Have them read in small groups or partners, but make sure to walk around and make sure they are actually reading. And usually once they get started, they're good, but who's gonna read first? And are we gonna read by sentences or paragraphs? Which should be already, they should know that, but they like to change things up on you randomly. Or if you're reading about a different country, do some research and bring in a snack or something that represents that country, or you just bring in hot chocolate or chocolate milk, that's easier. The next point four is called reading stew, and I didn't know what to call this, and stew is a bunch of different things, so we have reading stew. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was reading comprehension. I was reading a book called Shifting the Balance, and these are the first two shifts that you can make in that book. So shift one is reconsider how knowledge impacts comprehension. A study was done where they gave a group of children a passage about baseball. Some of the children had background knowledge. About baseball, and some did not. Those who had the background knowledge did better on the comprehension questions than those who did not, even those who were more proficient readers. So from that, background knowledge is important. Students come in with prior knowledge from what they've learned at home or previous years of school. When that knowledge is applied to the passage they are reading, it becomes background knowledge. Sometimes we need to help this background knowledge by giving information relevant to the text. And then the next one is rethink the role strategy instruction has in learning to comprehend. So number one, switch on what you know. Activate the prior knowledge and the background knowledge. Notice the text structure. And text structure was something new to me when I started teaching Abeka. The different text structures are compare, contrast, where a passage is comparing and contrasting two ideas. Descriptive, where it's describing something. Problem and solution, it will have a problem, present the solution. Sequential and chronological. Keep a close eye on comprehension. Stop and reread when meaning breaks down. Dig below the surface. Ask and answer questions as you read. It's hard to stop them. And this is an area I struggle in as a teacher, is asking questions as I read. But our head elementary teacher, she explains why it's important to me. And then fill in the missing pieces. Infer, pay attention to what the author is not saying, and then sum up core ideas to summarize. The next thing I put in my reading stew is oral reading grades. So I don't know if any of you saw this guidelines for oral reading on the CLE table. I just saw it the other day and grabbed it because I knew I had this coming up. The information I'm about to give you from my Abeka answer key, but this is going to say about the same thing, maybe using some different words. But this was really good. So the first thing I grade on is accuracy. Accuracy is pronouncing words and reading sentences correctly. Enunciation, saying the words clearly, not mumbling. Some students will need to slow down in order to accomplish this. Smoothness, reading by phrases rather than word by word. No pauses unless called for by punctuation or context. Alertness to punctuation, stopping at a period, pausing at a comma. The voice should drop at a period, rise at a question mark, and show excitement at an exclamation point. Expression, having good vocal inflection to make the story interesting and realistic. Comprehension, showing by expression and ability to answer questions a good understanding of the selection being read. Volume, reading loudly enough to be heard clearly. Holding the book away from the face and keeping the head up will help. Speed, reading at a speed that allows accuracy, smoothness, and expression. Poise, having confidence in reading and speaking before others. So if you're all like me, this list looks overwhelming. The good thing is we do not focus on every single one of these things at one time. I like to focus on three. If you look in your packet, I included an oral reading evaluation. This is what I use personally. So this is what I will be doing my first quarter. I'll be grading on accuracy, expression, and comprehension. I'll give them a number between 1 and 10 and then grade those numbers. And then if they say a word wrong, I'm going to write that in the comments. Also, another thing I do is I name, date, and date them before reading class, because trying to grade them while writing their name and the date is overwhelming to me. Another thing that is important is to grade on ability, not on effort. I like to grade on effort, but that's not an accurate representation of what they're doing. Or I would like to grade on effort. Another thing I wanted to mention is reading helps writing and writing helps reading. I won't go into the details, but get your students writing. My students write for 5 minutes a day and in our journals, and I have prompts for them and it's fun, and I'll leave that at that. D under that one is model, model, model. Our head elementary teacher says this over and over again. If you want your students to read with expression, read with expression. If you want them to stop at periods, stop at the periods. If you want them to answer the questions in complete sentences, ask the questions in complete sentences. Modeling how we want our students to read is so important. Also, modeling how we don't want them to read can be beneficial. And then I have a section on reluctant readers. So what should we do when our students just don't want to read? So find books that they enjoy and have them read books about that. And find books they enjoy that are on their level. That's what that's supposed to say. Give shorter sentences or paragraphs to help build confidence. If they want to, you have to be aware of the child, but let them sit beside you if that helps, and if that doesn't help, then don't put them beside you. For my method of pulling sticks, give them a warning before it's their turn. I give it while the person before is reading. It's not much of a warning, but it is a little bit. Praise your student when they do well, and you can praise on effort as well as ability. And if you have an extra reader, send it home with the child and have them read their story to a family member or pet. If you do not have an extra reader, make it their responsibility to take their reader home and bring it back to school the next day. Reading for enjoyment. This was my favorite part to study for. So, some tips for making reading engaging. Have a variety of books for your students to read. Do a reading challenge, which if you looked through your packet, I have a reading challenge. I made this up, so I don't know. It might have flaws. Let's just say it like that. For like reading to a pet or a stuffed animal, I would probably edit that to say 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. And I would probably give them this to them for a quarter. And if they finish it by the quarter, they'll probably get something fun. Or do a read-a-thon. Where am I? Our school last year did Read with Sophie, and I was going to try to find a little more information on that, and I forgot. I think they do it every year. I was talking to my principal about it, and it is fun. Do any of you know of any read-a-thons that exist out there? That's fine if you don't.
Didn't Western Fellowship do one last year, but our school didn't do it because it was too overlooked.
Okay.
Our school did it.
It sounded fun.
They started January maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder if it was January and then went to like April.
Okay.
And then the winning school got a prize. And I think second place got a prize. So like we would keep track of how many pages each student would read. And then like we just did an average.
Average per school?
Average per school. So, like, the bigger schools didn't necessarily have an advantage over the smaller schools.
Read with Sophie starts in October or November. I will say that. My next point is give opportunities for your class to share about the books they are reading and why they like them. I would take volunteers for this and keep it low pressure. This is not something I would require of students. Have your students fill out a book review. And this might be something I would require since it's not public speaking. This right here is the book review paper I made up. Title, author, why I liked this book. You get to rate it on 5 stars, put your name on it. I would print these on colored paper to make them more fun, except then maybe it would be hard to color in the stars. You can figure that out. A book review is not a book report. While it may contain elements of a book report, it should be shorter. When doing a book report, make it special. Like I said earlier, you can do it in a cereal box or a file folder. Excuse me. I saw another idea when I was looking for ideas. Well, someone made a sandwich out of their book report. And I'm not saying this should be done for every book report. My students do 3 to 4 book reports a year, and I make one of them a special project. Read different genres of books. I know not every book I read appeals to every student in my class, but I try to switch it up enough that they enjoy at least 1 or 2 or 3 of the books I read. Read books that show diversity. Different skin colors, different hair textures, children from different parts of the world. And now's the fun part. I get to show all the books I brought along with me. So the first one I have is The Name Jar. This is a story about a girl who moves to the United States of America from Korea. She is scared to tell the students at her school her name because it is hard to say. The next one I have are 3 books by Shannon Olson. Not because these are about from different countries, but I just love the pictures she has. I Have a Letter from Your Teacher on the Last Day of School, Our Class as a Family, and A Letter from Your Teacher on the First Day of School. And then the last one I have in this category is Just Just Ask is about a girl named Sonia who takes you through her garden. In her garden are children with different disabilities, and she talks about what makes each child special and unique. This book actually helped me a lot last year. One of my students was diagnosed with diabetes, and it talks about that in here. And it's something that wasn't going to affect the class, but yet they were going to have to know somehow. And so that just kind of explained it to them. Also, you do not need to write down all these books. I included a list of all of them for you. Read books that teach lessons. Some of my favorite books for this are, this one right here is my favorite. The Invisible Boy teaches about empathy. Brian feels invisible to everyone, especially his classmates and teacher at school. Who will notice Brian? And will Brian figure out maybe he isn't so invisible after all? And then I have any Wemmick book. Here's a collection of all the Wemmick books. So I have those. And then Because I Love You, which is another book by Matsuka. A wall, a hole, and a father who will always come looking for us, even when we make a mistake. Here's a list of chapter books I enjoy reading to my class. The first one, I read this one every year. I teach 2 grades, but we still read it every year. It's The Biggest Story. This is the story of the Bible in short form. It takes about 30 minutes for me to read it to my students, and it is a book I do read every year. The next 2 books I don't necessarily read every year, but they are Here's Benji and Benji and His Friends. Benji the Beaver learns lessons about creation and life as he lives with his family. He also learns lessons about getting along with his siblings. And then the book I did my diorama on, Snow Treasure, is a story set in World War II in Norway. Peter never thought he would be a hero, but there are $9 million in gold that will be stolen unless someone saves it. Follow My Leader. Jimmy is blinded in an accident with a firecracker. This is the story of how he relearns to do everything blind. And then a new one for me this year will be the Vanderbeeker book I mentioned earlier. It's, if you're familiar with the Moffitts, it's similar to that, but it is set in a more modern time. And then here is a list of books I wouldn't necessarily read to my class, but I do have them in my classroom library. So The Boxcar Children, The Littles, I did bring this next one, Escape from Mr. Limoncello's Library. This is a hilarious book, and we just love it. I also brought When Stars Are Scattered. This story is about two boys who live in a refugee camp and how they move to America. Beverly Cleary, Encyclopedia Brown, and All of a Kind Family. And then read good poetry to your students. These are some poetry books I've used in tutoring. I have not used with my classroom. The first one is Love That Dog. This one is great. And then this one, I'm going to recommend with a, I think the word is caveat. The One and Only Ivan is a sad book, but it is a book written in free verse poetry. So I thought I would include that here as well. And then be excited about reading yourself. If they are appropriate to share with your classroom, share the books you are reading, or better yet, read the books they are reading. And then there was a few more books. I ran to school this at lunch and picked these up, and I did not write these down. So if you want to write these down, here's a few more that I really like. I have The Dot by Peter Reynolds. And there is International Dot Day on September 15th, I believe. And so I always read this book and we make dots. And then I have Trying by Kobe Yamada. This is about a sculptor and how he thinks he's not doing a good job, and in the end he does an excellent job. And then these next four books I actually got this week, and they are to teach rules and voice levels and how to be quiet. So I have That Rule Doesn't Apply to Me, My Mouth is a Volcano, Decibella and Her 6-Inch Voice, and What If Everybody Did That. The pictures in this one are great. I would use this probably not above second grade. I would use this one for third and fourth. And then if you read the class description, or if you didn't, I asked that you would bring titles of your favorite books. So, if you give me a second, because I want to write these down too, because I'm always looking for book ideas. What are these books you've brought? There's Space. Oh, before we go into that, this is a list from Faith Builders. They have a first or a preschool through 12th grade. I printed off the second through fourth for you. I really like what they have written here in this box. I'm not going to read it. You can read that. But take what they say here and apply it to the list I've given you. All right, what are your books?
I'm trying to remember the author. But it's The House of 60 Fathers, and it's the same author as the Mender Dijon, I think. It's the same author as The Wheel on the School.
Okay.
But it's set in World War II, I think, in Asia. It's just a very sad, but a very good book. I just think it's so great because it teaches a lot of history along with the story. I forgot to bring any of my books, so.
Well, I brought plenty.
That my students enjoy, which were third and fourth graders, was the I Survive series. I don't know if any of you have heard of them or not, but my boys just love them.
They're excellent.
I read a book, I think it's called Treasures in the Treasure in the Oatmeal Box. What it's called. I don't remember the type, like who wrote the book. Anyway, it had my students crying, which I felt a little bit bad, but it's a really good book. Like, it's about a Down syndrome boy. And did you read the book?
Anyway. It sounds so good.
And it just, he had a twin, and so his sister had to like figure out how to handle him in public, you know, and stuff. And then, yeah, in the end, the boy dies, which is really sad. I remember my teacher read it to me, and she just bawled at the end. And so it always stuck out to me. I was like, I need to read this book. And I read it, I was like, okay, this is a book my students. they loved it. Like, it was the best read of my whole year.
I like books that teach empathy.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
That's why I'm totally going to get that.
I think they call them thrift books. And then another one my students loved was the Little Pilgrim's Progress books.
Yes, those are excellent.
I got third book this year. I'm so excited to read them too. They love looking at pictures and stuff. Like, they're just so enthralled.
What was that first title?
Treasure in an Oatmeal Box. Something like that. Like, it's either the or Anne. I'm not sure which, but something like that.
I don't remember the author, but there's one, Mail in May.
Yes.
Girl Got Mail.
Yes.
There's one I read to my students, and I'm trying to remember something about it's orphan children. I don't know if it's called The Orphan Train, or maybe someone can help me out. It's about three or four children. There's about four books about them.
I know you're talking about one read them to me, but I can't remember what they're called.
The Orphan Train series.
Okay, is that what it's called?
Yeah, look.
Whistle Stop Well.
Yes, that one.
My students really love those two.
I read mine, Good Old Farmer Boy, last year, and it sounds kind of crazy because it's one of those classics that you just don't even think that anybody hasn't read it, but they hadn't read it, and they thought it was just hysterical. And we got so insanely hungry over the descriptions of all the food.
Another one I was going to mention and didn't was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but that one is in the Faith Builders list. That is actually what I did my folder report on. Thank you so much for sharing. I am going to read a story now.
If I find it. It's another sad book, so.
But it's a really good one. Thank you, Mr. Falker. The grandpa held the jar of honey so that all of the family could see, then dipped a ladle into it and drizzled honey on the cover of a small book. The little girl had just turned 5. "Stand up, little one," he cooed. "I did this for your mother, your uncles, your older brother, and now you." Then he handed the book to her. "Taste." She dipped her finger into the honey and put it into her mouth. "What is that taste?" the grandpa asked. The little girl answered, "Sweet." Then all the family said in a single voice, "Yes, and so is the knowledge. Chase it through the pages of a book." The little girl knew that that the promise to read was at last hers. Soon she was going to learn to read. Trisha, the littlest girl in the family, grew up loving books. Her school teacher mother read to her every night. Her red-headed brother brought his books. I'll show you the pictures after I'm done reading. Home from school and shared them. And whenever she visited the family farm, her grandfather and grandmother read to her by the stone fireplace. When she turned 5 and went to kindergarten, most of all, she hoped to read. Each day she saw the kids in the first grade across the hall reading, and before the year was over, some of the kids in her own class began to read, not Trisha. Still, she loved being at school because she could draw. The other kids would crowd around her and watch her do her magic with crayons. "In first grade, you'll learn to read," her brother said. In first grade, Trisha sat in a circle with the other kids. They were all holding our neighborhood, their first reader, sounding out letters and words. They said, "Buh, buh, oi, boy," and "look, look." The teacher smiled at them when they put all the sounds together and got a word right. But when Trisha looked at a page, all she saw were wiggling shapes. And when she tried to sound out words, the other kids laughed at her. "Trisha, what are you looking at in that book?" they'd say. "I'm reading," she'd always say back to them. But her teacher would move on to the next person. Always when it was her turn to read, her teacher had to help her with every single word. And while the other kids moved up into the second reader and third reader, she stayed alone in our neighborhood. Trisha began to feel different. She began to feel dumb. The harder words got for the little girl, the more and more time she spent drawing. How she loved to draw, or just sitting and dreaming, or when she could, going for walks with her grandmother. One summer day, she and her grandma were walking together in the small woods behind their farm. It was twilight. The air was sweet and warm. Fireflies were just coming up from the grasses. As they walked, Trisha said, "Grandma, do you think I'm different?" "Of course," her grandma answered. "To be different is the miracle of life. You see all of those fireflies? Everyone is different." "Do you think I'm smart?" Trisha didn't feel smart. Her grandma hugged her. "You're the smartest, quickest, dearest little thing ever." Right then, the little girl felt safe in her grandma's arms. Reading didn't matter so much. Trisha's grandma used to say that the stars were holes in the sky. They were the light of heaven coming from the other side. And she used to say that someday she would be on the other side where the light comes from. One evening, they lay on the grass together and counted the lights from heaven. "You know," her grandma said, "all of us will go there someday. Hang on to the grass or you'll lift right off the ground and there you'll be." They laughed and both hung on to the grass. But it was not long after that night that her grandma must have let go of the grass because she went to where the lights were on the other side. And not long after that, Trisha's grandpa let go of the grass too. School seemed harder and harder now. Reading was just plain torture. When Sue Ellen read her page or Tommy Bob read his page, they read so easily that Trisha would watch the top of their heads to see if something was happening to their heads that wasn't happening to hers. And numbers were the hardest thing of all to read. She never added anything right. "Line the numbers up before you add them," the teacher would say. But when Trisha tried, the numbers looked like a stack of blocks, wobbly and ready to fall. She knew she was dumb. Then, one day, her mother announced that she had gotten a teaching job in California, a long way from the family farm in Michigan. Even though her grandma and grandpa were gone, the little girl didn't want to move. Maybe, though, the teachers and kids in her new school wouldn't know how dumb she was. Since she and her mother and brother moved across the country in a two-tone 1949 Plymouth, it took 5 days. But at the new school, it was all the same. When she tried to read, she stumbled over the words. The cat ran. She was reading like a baby in the third grade. And when her teacher read along with them and called on Trisha for an answer, she gave the wrong answer every time. "Hey, dummy," a boy called out to her on the playground. "How come you are so dumb?" Other kids stood near him and they laughed. Trisha could feel the tears burning in her eyes. How she longed to go back to her grandparents' farm in Michigan. Now Trisha wanted to go to school less and less. "I have a sore throat," she'd say to her mother, or, "I have a stomach ache." She dreamed more and more and drew more and more, and she hated school. Then, when Trisha started fifth grade, the school was all abuzz. There was a new teacher. He was tall and elegant. Everybody loved his striped coat and slick gray pants. He wore the neatest clothes. All the usual teacher's pets gathered around him, Stevie Joe and Alice Marie, Davy and Michael Lee. But right from the start, it didn't seem to matter to Mr. Falker which kids were the cutest, or the smartest, or the best at anything. Mr. Falker would stand behind Trisha whenever she was drawing and whisper, "This is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Do you know how talented you are?" When he said this, even the kids who teased her would turn around in their seats and look at her drawings. But they still laughed whenever she gave a wrong answer. Then, one day, she had to stand up and read, which she hated. She was stumbling through a page in Charlotte's Web, and the page was going all fuzzy when the kids began to laugh out loud. Mr. Folker, in his plaid jacket and his butterfly tie, said, "Stop! Are all of you so perfect that you can look at another person and find fault with her?" That was the last day anyone laughed out loud or made fun of her, all except for Eric. He sat behind Trisha for 2 whole years, but he seemed to almost hate her. Trisha didn't know why. He waited by the door of the classroom for her and pulled her hair. He waited for her on the playground, leaned in her face, and called her, "Toad!" Trisha was afraid to turn any corner for fear Eric would be there. She felt completely alone. The only time she was really happy was when she was around Mr. Folker. He let her erase the blackboards. Only the best students got to do that. He patted her on the back whenever she got something right, and he looked hard and mean at any kid who teased her. But the nicer Mr. Folker was to Trisha, the worse Eric treated her. He got all the other kids to wait for her on the playground, or in the cafeteria, or even in the bathroom, and to jump out and call her stupid or ugly, and Trisha began to believe them. She discovered that if she asked to go to the bathroom just before recess, she could hide under the inside stairwell during the free time and not have to go outside at all. In that dark place, she felt completely safe. But one day at recess, Eric followed her to her secret hiding place. "Have you become a mole?" he laughed. And he pulled her out into the hall and danced around her. "Dumbbell, dumbbell, maggoty, you dumbbell!" Trisha buried her head in her arm and curled up in a ball. Suddenly, she heard footsteps. It was Mr. Folker. He marched Eric down to the office. When he came back, he found Trisha. "I don't think you'll have to worry about that boy again," he said softly. "What was he teasing you about, little one?" "I don't know," Trisha shrugged. Trisha was sure Mr. Folker believed that she could read. She had learned to memorize what the kid next to her was reading, or she would wait for Mr. Folker to help her with a sentence. Then she'd say the same thing that he did. "Good," he would say. Then, one day, Mr. Folker asked her to stay after school and help wash the blackboards. He put on music and brought out little sandwiches, and they worked and talked. All at once, he said, "Let's play a game. I'll shout out letters. You write them on the board with the wet sponge as quickly as you can." "A!" he shouted. She wiped a watery A. "8!" he shouted. She made a watery 8. 14! 3! D! M! Q! he shouted out. He shouted out many, many letters and numbers. Then he walked up behind her, and together they looked at the board. It was a watery mess. Trisha knew that none of the letters or numbers looked like they should. She threw the sponge down and tried to run. But Mr. Folker caught her arm and sank to his knees in front of her. "You poor child," he said. "You think you're dumb, don't you? How awful for you to be so lonely and afraid." She sobbed. "But, little one, don't you understand? You don't see letters or numbers the way other people do, and you've gotten through school all this time and fooled many, many good teachers." He smiled at her. That took cunning and smartness and such bravery. Then he stood up and finished washing the board. "We're going to change all that, girl. You're going to read, I promise you." Now, almost every day after school, she met with Mr. Folker and Miss Plessy, a reading teacher. They did a lot of things she didn't even understand. At first, she made circles in the sand, and then big sponge circles on the blackboard, going from left to right, left to right. Another day, they flicked letters on a screen, and Trisha shouted them out loud. Still other days, she worked with wooden blocks and built words. Letters, letters, letters. Words, words, words. Always sounding them out, and that felt good. But though she'd read words, she hadn't read a whole sentence. and deep down she still felt dumb. And then one spring day, had it been 3 months or 4 months since they had started, Mr. Folker put a book in front of her. She'd never seen it before. He picked a paragraph in the middle of a page and pointed at it. Almost as if it were magic, or as if light poured into her brain, the words and sentences started to take shape on the pages as they never had before. She marched them off to... Slowly, she read a sentence, then another, and another, and finally she'd read a paragraph, and she understood the whole thing. She didn't notice that Mr. Folker and Miss Plessy had tears in their eyes. That night, Trisha ran home without stopping to catch her breath. She bounded up the front steps, threw open her front door, and ran through the dining room to the kitchen. She climbed up on the cupboard and grabbed a jar of honey. Then she went into the living room and found the book on a shelf, the very book that her grandpa had shown her so many years ago. She spooned honey on the cover and tasted the sweetness and said to herself, "The honey is sweet, and so is knowledge, but knowledge is like the bee who made the honey. It has to be chased through the pages of a book." Then she held the book, honey and all, close to her chest. She could feel tears roll down her cheeks, but they weren't tears of sadness. She was happy. So very happy. And that's all I have. So you may be dismissed.